Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about something that's changing the game for women in dental leadership. It's called the Empowered Leadership Experience for Women in Dental. It's a six-month transformational journey for women who are done with burnout, over-functioning, and trying to lead like someone they're not. This isn't just another leadership training. It's a coming home to your voice, your power, and your joy. If you've ever felt alone at the top or stuck somewhere in the middle, this one's for you. Enrollment is now open. Head to leadhership.com to enroll. Because real leadership isn't about performing. It's about remembering who you are. Now, let's get into today's episode. Man, I really love this conversation with Dr. Connie Wang. She is a fairly new associate working within an emerging group, and she talks about some awesome techniques on how to overcome imposter syndrome and how to connect with your patients as a newer associate in a dental group. She talks about some neuroscience techniques that she uses, some self-talk, and a whole lot of self-awareness that's really gotten her to where she is today. She incorporates a lot of humor. She incorporates a lot of joy, and she just really treasures her position as an associate doc, and especially in this practice. Funny enough, her original degrees are in to be a pharmacist, and then she transitioned into the world of dentistry, graduating from Tufts University. We talk about all kinds of things, and something that I just really admire about her is her commitment to being an incredible doctor for her patients, and also being an incredible member of her team. She puts in the work, she puts in the reps, as I often like to say, and she's definitely somebody that you want to follow online because she is committed to sharing everything that she learns to other doctors and especially younger associates so that they can feel really comfortable and confident as they start navigating their ways through their careers. I know you're going to enjoy this episode, and I know you're going to want to follow her online too. I just had so much respect and admiration for all the work she's putting into being the best associate she can be, and also just the best human that she can be and how she contributes to our world. So I'm really excited to share with you Dr. Connie Wang. Dr. Connie, thank you so much for being on today. I've been so excited about having this conversation. You embody so many different things. I know this episode is going to be really fun. You specialize in conversation, which I know a lot of people can really relate to needing some help in this area, especially being a clinician and, you know, having to make small talk with patients and being able to connect and how that also ties into case acceptance. You're also a relatively new grad coming out of school and working for an emerging group as an associate, which is also comes with so many different things that we can talk about there too. And you've also made a career change. So you started out actually graduating from pharmacy school and then navigating into dental, having graduated from Tufts, which is awesome, and which is such an incredible school. So I want to hear about all of this. And let's start with what has been some of the, I guess, the biggest things you can share being a young associate working for a group that I believe you said has six offices throughout the greater Boston area. Being a new grad in today's landscape, what has the experience been like for you in this kind of setting?
So I feel incredibly lucky because I think I'm in like the minority of like new dentists where I just started out in a new job, didn't really know what I was looking for per se. Like now I look back and it's kind of funny to see my initial post because like I was like, oh yeah, I'm interested in this, this, and this. And now I look back and I'm like, I really didn't know anything about like myself and who I was as a provider. But I was so lucky because the boss that I ended up with, the mentor that I have today, he's still my mentor and my boss, and I've loved where I work. And I know this is always naive to say, but I feel like I love where I work so much that for as long as I have to hold a handpiece, like, I want to be here. And I know that's not the traditional model for dentistry. I feel like the stereotype is you're supposed to, quote unquote, supposed to like start working somewhere as an associate and then open up your own practice and then like, and then life is good and then you ride off into the sunset, which we know is not how it actually happens.
Yeah. So tell me what about it that you love so much? Because there's so many doctors that I work with and know that are on the other side of it, right? They're the ones building the groups and buying offices and acquiring and trying to keep their associates on and trying to keep them happy. So hearing from somebody that's really happy, what do you love most about where you work that has you want to stay there and ride off into the sunset with them?
With them, yeah. So I think at the basic level, all of us want to feel like, we all want to feel seen and heard for who we really are. And I think a lot of jobs when we come out, that's not really like the emphasis. I guess how I knew in my gut that this was the right decision was I had interviewed for like 3 job positions. It was kind of like Goldilocks, like they were all different. But the thing that made my mentor stand out and why I chose to stick with him was because he was the only one where when I was interviewing, all of them kept saying things like, I'm going to like make you into this. I'm gonna make you a star. I'm gonna make you like, they were promising like all these things and just kept emphasizing obviously how like little I knew, which I know, trust me. But I felt like when I met my mentor, the second I met him, I felt like I was enough. And I felt like he really saw me for who I was. And there was none of this, like, you're not good enough. It's like, I see your potential. I see where you are right now. And if anything, I'm just going to help you become a better version of yourself. And so recognizing that, I was like, wait, like, I'm enough. I don't have to change. I don't have to be anyone besides who I am. I just have to show up and try my best. Like, okay, I can do that. And I think that's what I love so much about where I work is, like, I don't feel like I'm number 3. I don't feel like I'm number, like, just some number or some cog in the machine. And, like, what's really nice is I think a lot of us new grads, we have such major imposter syndrome coming into the workforce. So a lot of people are like, okay, how do I seem older? How do I seem better and like more experienced? And what this place has allowed me, because it has such good systems and like it's a very healthy practice, it's been there for a long time. We don't have a lot of like, it's not a startup basically. Because it's so stable, I've been able to focus on like, okay, how do I accentuate the best parts of myself now and just succeed as myself where I am now instead of trying to hide that and seem like something I'm not.
I love this. And so your mentor, what is his role in the company?
So I guess he's like CEO, but he works like clinically once a week with me in one of our practices. He's had like such an evolution of his career. He had many years where he worked like 6 days a week clinically, right? In like 1 or 2 practices. Then over time he's expanded. So now, of course, he has like all the roles that come with CEO, but I feel like to me, he's just like Steve, my mentor, who like I text him, like, that's just Steve. I text him cases all the time. I meet with him regularly. He's just a really good leader. I hope he never listens to this because I don't want his head to get too big. He's a really good leader. And I think what is really great about him is he knows what structure to provide so that I can feel good and I can feel on track and I can feel like my goals are hit. But he also knows where to loosen the reins, where I can be myself and just grow on my own. Because I think a lot of it is like, you want someone to guide you and help you so that you don't make the same mistakes they did, but you got to make some mistakes to learn and grow into your own provider.
Yeah. And I appreciate your honesty with all this. And I know it'll be really helpful, especially for a lot of folks like Steve who are out there building, you know, multiple offices and looking to mentor associates, because it's often this missing piece in a lot of that relationship building. And you touched on something which was imposter syndrome, you know, for new grads. And I've spoken to a lot of seasoned dentists and, you know, they often say, man, imposter syndrome can last, you know, at least the first 5 years of your career, if not 10, until you really just like truly settle into going, okay, yeah, this patient is really allowing me to do this in their mouth. This is really like, this is who I am in the world. You know, I can do this. So for you, I know you're about 3 years out, you said, and it sounds like it's still something that you work through. And I think especially for a lot of young women dentists, I've noticed this too. I mean, the men for sure have it as well, but I know with a lot of young women that I work with, they often feel it a little bit more because say the previous doctor that was there, the previous owner or something like that may have been a man. Now all of a sudden they have this young female doctor coming in fresh out of school, and patients can be pretty tough sometimes and they can can be very honest and they can kind of question like, who are you and why are you here? And are you really the doctor?
Oh my gosh, I'm actually dealing with this right now, which is so funny. So one of the practices, one of the group practices that I work in, we had a doctor just retire. He was there for like a million years. He's like everyone's like favorite doctor, right? And so it's always like, we all love him too. And it's just so hard sometimes to fill those shoes. And so one of my best tips is like, don't try to fill those shoes. Don't try to be that guy. And the analogy that I use is like, okay, pretend you're at a party. Pretend that that older dentist is a mutual friend, right? Like if you've ever been to a party and you didn't know someone and you go up to someone and you're like, wait, you know, like Mary, I know Mary too. And they're like, oh my God, how's Mary doing? I think too many people try to like replace the old dentist, be like, I'm the new version. And like, you just simply can't, like, you don't have that relationship. You're the new person. Like you need to not only start from scratch, but be your own person. So rather than trying to replace Mary, you're Mary's friend. And so keeping them updated on Mary, like, for example, I always just like every day I see people for checkups and I'm like, hi, I know you're used to like Dr. So-and-so. I actually saw him over the weekend. I did see him over the weekend for like retirement party. So that helps. But I'm like, oh, I saw him at this party. He looks great. He's up to this. He just had a new grandchild. Like I fill them in. And so from the second I walked in the room, I started the tone as a mutual friend rather than a stranger and rather than like some creepy clone of like the other doctor.
I love this. And that is such great coaching and really great advice, because I think what you're touching on too is you're building trust. And, you know, for a long time, there's this idea of transferring that trust, right, to the next person. And that can be used in all of the interactions throughout the office. So like, you know, between you and the patient, you know, from that original doctor and then to the patient that you're seeing now. And then also transferring that trust, you know, from your conversation with the patient, then if you're handing it off to the treatment coordinator or even the hygienist, you know, if they're talking to the patient, they're transferring that trust to you when you come in. So similar to what you're saying, I always encourage, you know, with new grads that are replacing a doc, even having the hygienist and the assistants, you know, edify that new doc. So saying, oh my gosh, you know, Dr. Connie's starting and she's going to be seeing you today. And she's so incredible. You should have seen some of the work she did last week on some of these patients. She's so kind. She's so funny. She's brilliant. And we're just so excited to have her here with us. And they have that relationship with the hygienist or assistant, say. And so by having them also share that trust makes it a good intro for you. And I think these are steps a lot of offices skip over, because again, we see like assistants, hygienists, doctors see how many patients a day, right? It could be 8, 10, 12 patients a day, say. And for people in the office, it tends to be like, oh, just another patient, right? I know you don't think that way, but when you're seeing so many patients a week, it's like, it just becomes part of the routine. But we forget that that patient only comes to the dentist maybe once every 6 months or, you know, maybe 4 times a year tops or something like that in most cases, right? So it's a big deal. And they need all that as if you're only patient the whole week. They need that level of attention and care that I think a lot of people take for granted. But just having those little transfers and those pieces of connection can make such a huge difference. And I know that's something that you specialize in too, which is like mastering the quote unquote small talk. So I want to talk about that next. But I do want to just like really reemphasize what you talked about, which was letting them know, like, hey, I still talk to this doctor, or I know what they're up to and they're happy I'm here. Like we have a relationship. And so I just want to remind you that I didn't just roll in off the latest bus from dental school and just found you here. Like I've been selected. I have a relationship with the team. Like they want me here too. So I just want to let you know that. Okay. So with all that, you have some really great tips on small talk stuff. Where do you want to start with that?
Let's see. So I guess a good place to start with is this, because we talked about imposter syndrome. We talked about how we're like, if we're inherently in the dental field, we're like high achievers, all of that. Something that I think has always helped for people that I talk to with social anxiety, there's a quote that I learned in a book. It was, you want to be the brick, not the cathedral. I say that because a lot of times the social anxiety you have when starting a conversation with someone is like, oh, what if they think I'm not funny enough? I'm too boring, or like they're not gonna get me or whatever. That's often if we walk in, one, only thinking about ourselves and how we come across, which I kind of like have to remind people, like, sometimes that is an ego check, right? It's more about the other person in front of you. Be the brick, not the cathedral means when you're building a conversation, the best conversation is like you lay a brick, they lay a brick, you lay a brick, they lay a brick. When you think about a conversation that way, it's so much more like digestible and not so anxiety inducing than walking in and expecting yourself to be the high and mighty cathedral for them to observe, right? So I always want people to start off walking into rooms thinking, I just have to lay down a brick. That's all it is. You don't have to build a cathedral and impress them.
That's such an awesome analogy. Yeah, I think that's really great. Because I know so many people, too, that really admire people or they have role models and they try to emulate them when they speak. And especially like even famous people, famous conversationalists or even comedians or something like that. And it's like, you're not going to get there overnight.
Do you have someone like a celebrity who you really like admire or you think is like so like witty, conversationally like talented?
Oh gosh.
Everyone says Theo Von. Everyone I know says
Theo Von, really?
Yeah, on the internet, whenever I don't actually like watch him or like know him that well, but whenever I make a video about whenever I mention humor or wittiness or thinking quick on your feet, everyone in the comments is like Theo Von.
That's interesting. Well, he's one of the top podcasters, I guess, right now. And I do watch a lot of his podcasts. And there's something about him that I find very endearing. He has such a curiosity, and the way his mind works isn't how mine works. So when he asks questions, I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't think about it that way. That is a good question. That's a unique way of asking that. Like, he just has this earnestness too about him that he can ask these questions that could be perceived as being antagonistic or something like that. But he just has this approach that is genuine curiosity, and he really has admiration for other people as well. There's some depth to him. And I think that's what he's kind of this walking contradiction, because from the outside, he seems like this total mulleted Southern goofball, right? But then you hear him and you kind of see and you're like, oh, this guy's pretty deep, actually. He's got a whole lot of feelings in there. So I do appreciate him. And then, I mean, this is just top of mind because of all the media frenzy, but I've really admired some of the stuff that Timothée Chalamet has said lately. Just like, I'm such a Gen Z, I think, when it comes to celebrities sometimes. But I just think he's such a special guy out there in the world when we're talking celebrities. There's just something that's very magnetic and unique about his approach. And I think one of the things I find really fascinating is how he's so all in on everything he does. And his creativity I find really fascinating. When he wanted to win the Oscar for
this, yeah.
Yeah, and he won the SAG Award, but he never ended up winning the Oscar. But when he won the SAG Award, he was like, I'm committed to greatness. Like, I want to be the best. And I was like, dang, that is cool. Because nowadays, declaring that you want to be the best is sort of not cool. You got to be one with the group these days.
I'm actually so glad that you mentioned that, because one of, I think, the biggest thing that people are forgetting is like, we have this idea of like, oh, I have to be magnetic, I have to be charming, I have to be funny, blah blah blah. Really, all you have to be is vulnerable, because like the number one trait that will make someone open up, they've done research studies on this, it's vulnerability. So like, you have to start, it's a chain reaction, but someone has to start that chain reaction. And for some reason, it's like not cool to like be that person. All the more reason why it's actually admirable like to be vulnerable in this day and age. So I think that's something a lot of people have to practice, especially for like, to bring it back to like dentistry. One way that I try to practice this is, and this isn't something I learned in a book, this is just something I've picked up on, so I don't know if there's research to back this up, but when I walk in a room, like, I'm probably gonna be recommending something if someone needs something. So before that, I want to know, before I share my expertise, I want to know what their expertise is. I don't really necessarily mean work, but I'll just start off the conversation like, oh, like, how'd your weekend go? Somewhere in there, I'm going to get a nugget of something that I can latch onto. Let's say they garden. I'd love to ask for tips. I want to see my patient in their zone of genius, because usually when I'm walking in, they're nervous, their cheeks are like clenched because they think I'm going to tell them they need something, right? We're not really seeing the real them. They have their wall up. So the best and fastest way to get someone's wall down is, I'm like, tell me about your favorite thing, right? So I'll ask them. I'm like, oh my gosh, I usually, it's something legit. Like, I'll be like, oh, well, like, my husband and I are looking for our first house, right? And I want a plot of land to garden. Do you have any suggestions for like, how big of a yard am I supposed to look for? What kind of dirt should I look for? What stores do you like? Like, I'm just asking all these questions so I can get them in their zone of genius on their platform to shine. And there's something reciprocal where once I let them shine, be their genius, be the expert of that, then by the time it's my turn, they're like, well, I already went, so now it's her turn to go. I can ask her questions about the crown that she's suggesting. Oh, like, she trusts me for gardening, I'm gonna trust her for the crown. That's how you build trust.
I love it. Yeah, that's so cool. And as you were saying that too, I was really recognizing one of the things that you really admired about your mentor is, and just the company that you work for, is that you feel seen, right? And you feel like you're enough and you're accepted for who you are. With that sounds like a huge value to you. And so that's what you're expressing to your patients too. Like, hey, I see you. You know, you're more than just a mouth in my chair. Like, tell me a little bit about you. And then they're like, oh, she's getting to know me. And they feel that sense of connection. And exactly like you said, like, it builds that trust. And I mean, of course, I've been a patient, right, in dental offices services and variety of other providers in my life. And because of who I am, and I connect deeply with people all the time, whenever I go into an office and they don't connect with me, it is like, man, I shut down. I never want to go back. I don't trust them at all. I feel like they don't understand my history, my approach, like what matters
100%.
To me.
Can I share? There's something that I learned from this book that I think every single dental professional needs to listen to this book, okay? It's not about small talk. It's called Just Listen by Mark Goulston. He was an FBI. It's kind of funny. He was an FBI negotiations, like a hostage negotiations, like specialist, which is kind of funny because it's like us dentists have to literally negotiate with people to take care of themselves. But that's what we got to do, right? So that's what piqued my interest in the book. I'm like, you know what? If he can navigate his way out of a hostage situation, then like I can navigate someone into taking care of themselves. So the book is all about how to get through to anyone when they don't want to listen to you. And there's a lot of research behind this. There's like a whole cycle of how to like talk to someone, and it's called the persuasion cycle, but I don't love the word persuasion because like it makes it seem like we have ulterior motives, but it's called the persuasion cycle. And one important thing that factors into all of this is something called our mirror neurons. Have you heard of this before?
I think I've heard of some version of this, but keep going.
Yes. So basically Mark Goulston, he's like a behavioral scientist on top of like, or he studied behavioral science on top of being an FBI hostage negotiations person. And so he believes, he has a theory that we are all walking around with something called mirror neuron deficit. So what is mirror neuron deficit? We all have mirror neurons in our brain. They're what make us like empathetic. They're what make us like a kind of community-based animal, right? They've done studies where if you have two monkeys, one monkey watches another monkey eat a banana, the other monkey watching, the parts of his brain light off as if he's eating it. So we are for some reason programmed to mirror each other or to like feel that empathy for each other. What happens though, and this especially happens to, they've noticed, high performing CEOs, to spouses, to just probably you listening. If you're listening to this, you probably have mirror neuron deficit. Every day you show up in the world and you try your best. Your boss asks you to do something, you do it 10 times better. The person in the subway gets in front of you, you let them, right? Like all day, we're kind of like mirroring other people and treating other people the way they want. But if no one is mirroring us back, that's when we have mirror neuron deficit. That's when we shut down. That's when we have tantrums because we're like, I'm putting in all this work to mirror everyone else, but no one else is mirroring me. That's the person that you meet in the chair who doesn't want to listen to you. That's the person who you meet in the chair and they don't respect dentistry. They don't want the x-rays. They don't blah, 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 blah. And so that learning this has changed my entire approach to walking into a room. I used to feel so at the mercy of other people. I'm like, if they're a nice bubbly patient, I'm gonna kill it. But if it's like some cranky old man, it's game over, right? I used to be like a victim to whoever was in the chair. They had all the control. But now learning this trick, I feel like I have tools and like I feel like I have so much more control of situations in the room that I walk into. Of course, I don't have like 100% like acceptance rate, please, who does? And if you do, there's something wrong with that. But I do feel so much more confident walking into each room because I know at least like a target. My target is not talk about the crowd. My target is how do I mirror them, make them feel seen and heard. And knowing that, that's like the best strategy to build a relationship with someone.
Yeah, that is freaking awesome. Thank you for sharing that. That's going to be so valuable for anyone listening, no matter what position they're in business and in life. And I think that's really powerful. And it's also something to even recognize with our own selves, right? Like if we're recognizing what's off here, oh, I don't feel seen, you know, we're just talking about, I mean, I deal with stuff like that all the time too. I talk about temper tantrums. My poor husband, probably every year around my birthday, I'm like, you know, cause I didn't have like the best birthdays growing up. So I'm like, I need everyone to just, you know, and it's internal. I don't do anything external. Like externally I'm all stoic and like, whatever, it's cool, it's chill, you know, but internally I'm like, please, somebody, please just recognize me, you know?
It shows up in little ways. And it's so funny because it's when we act our spiniest and our thorniest that we're actually like screaming for like connection and for someone to listen to us.
Totally. We don't know how to ask for it half the time. But let's use an example, because this is so great. This is so helpful, where you are walking into that room and it is a cranky old man, right? And you already know. So how would you approach that conversation when you walk in?
Totally. So of course, everyone's different. I try to see like body language too. Well, also, here's the thing. I'm going to give all my tips today, but it really couldn't be possible without my team. My team is like everything, because usually my hygienist has come in. She's told me the hot things that have already happened. She's like, he doesn't like this, he doesn't like that. So I'm really never, ever walking in blind. Like my assistant or hygienist has briefed me. But knowing that, I'm starting to put together a story. I'm like, okay, when was the last time he saw a dentist? What happened? I think a lot of times when we see like negative emotion, like someone being angry or like thorny back at us, the natural reaction is like, you know what? I'm just gonna like avoid this and be be like, all right, I'll give you an estimate on the way out, right? That's like our go-to line. We're like, all right, we'll give you an estimate, schedule at the front, and then we just run out of the room. I feel like now I really actually appreciate when I see negative emotion, because I'm like, okay, this is something to unpack. There's something there. It's harder when you meet the old man who doesn't say anything and doesn't give you anything, because then you're like, the wall is very much up. When I mentioned that persuasion cycle too, there's like a bunch of stages, but most people in the dental chair are stuck in stage one and two. Stage one is resisting, stage two is listening. So like, don't think like, okay, I need them to totally fall in love with me by the end of this appointment. My only goal is, how do I get them from stage one to stage two? How do I get them to listen? And really the only way to do that is to listen to what they want to say. And I think everyone has something they want to get off their chest. I've had people, and like, I don't just mean dental. I think we know to ask for those. Like, what have your experiences been in the past? Have you had trouble getting numb? Did you have a crown that broke and that's why you don't want a crown anymore? We know those things. But sometimes the things that come out of my patients' mouths just totally catch me off guard, because like, I wasn't expecting, like, we think they're acting this way in the chair because they hate us. We have all these narratives about like, they don't care about dentistry, blah, 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 blah. We actually just have so many like biases running through our head. We're like totally judging people. So my tip is, allow people to surprise you. Cause I've had some people be like, you know what? Like, I'm in pain. And I'm like, okay, why are you in pain? It's because they're actually dealing with some other like freaky diagnosis. And so me telling them that they have need fillings, whatever, it's like the straw that broke the camel's back. So I need to figure out what's actually the camel's back part of it. That's my best tip for getting in there.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're saying don't give up. So instead of just kind of writing them off and saying, all right, this person's not into what I have to say, I'm going to kind of exit out the back door quickly, you're really sitting with them and really trying to connect and put the pieces together for them.
Yeah. And like, you have nothing to lose. Sure. If you leave that room, they don't listen to you, they don't schedule the whatever. At least you tried, right? But I think a lot of providers get in their head, because like, we're high perform, we're high achieving, we're whatever, we want things to go well. So when we catch a whiff that it's not going to go the way we want or whatever, we just like shut down and like don't know how to handle it. Now, granted, I don't want to make it sound like everything is sunshine and rainbows. There are definitely people that you just, it's for whatever reason, you tried your best to get across to them. It wasn't going to happen. It's not the day. Just don't take it personally. And I think that's something that my group practice model has like afforded me, is like, let's see, I work in practices where there's 6 to 7, maybe sometimes even 8 like hygiene columns, somewhere in there, 5 to like 8-ish, maybe 7 hygiene columns. I have a lot of exams to do. So like, if I don't get this one person on this one exam, that's okay. I'm going to keep trying, keep working on it. And so I think like that mentality is really helpful for young providers out there. Like, don't beat yourself up if you didn't crush that one exam, because just keep practicing. It's such a craft, such a whatever. Like, every time you do something, you're going to learn a better way to deliver something, a better question to ask. And like, that will just come with time.
Yeah. So that's a great segue, because I wanted to ask, like, for the imposter syndrome and some of the young docs out there getting started, and even in some cases, like you're saying, replacing existing docs and coming into like an established office. I know that's hard for a lot of people. What are some things that you've really embodied or taken on that have worked for you that you could share? You know, one to three things that could really make a difference for somebody similar to you.
Totally. Number one, so one tangible trick that helped me, I know not every office is like this. This is what's worked for me though. Everyone tends to eat in the lunchroom together. That has taught me more than any textbook could, because I'm talking to hygienists, like talk about their day. I'm learning their pain points. I'm learning like, oh, like what is it about like us dentists that when we do exams, like what's annoying that we do? And I just learned so much about how to be a better dentist from the hygienist, the assistants, the front desk. So when you soak up that kind of like lunchroom environment, it's so much easier and you build that rapport. That's the reason why the rooms are already primed when I walk in, because a lot of the hygienists have already said like, oh, Dr. Wang is so great, blah, 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 blah. Like, you have to put in the effort though to make those deep relationships with the hygienists and the assistants and the front desk. Granted, again, I think a lot of that is like hiring and creating team culture, which I know is like everything. It's like the backbone of having a good practice. But I think that's probably one reason why it's hard in a lot of like newer practices with new grads. Another good tip is, so I feel like I have like tangible, concrete on paper goals. And then I have like me as Connie goals that I've gone through with my mentor, which is helpful. So for example, like every couple of weeks, every month, we'll go through like my KPIs. So being like patient treatment acceptance, let's see, like production per whatever, like we go over those metrics, right? But those aren't like my end all be all. I feel like I've been lucky to have time and space to reflect on like what fills my my cup at the end of the day? What are my like true like goals as a provider? Not production goals, but like true goals. And that leads me into my third tip, the relationship with the assistant, because arguably like they're your right-hand man, right? And I've been so lucky. The assistant that I work the most with, a lot of people know from my social media page, his name is Alex. We have such a great relationship. And I think one of the things that has helped me with my relationship with my assistant is we developed a kind of like a creed, like a list of just three things that just need to happen every appointment. They're like our North Star compass. That way, when shit hits the fan, which it inevitably will, you know, it's healthcare. If I can get like even like two out of the three done, I'm happy. He knows he did a good job. We're on the same page, right? So I'll give you an example of my creed, but forever whoever's listening, you can make your own creed with your own assistants. And also, I want to say like I didn't make this creed like sitting down at work. I like took him out to like lunch or dinner, and like we were talking. I wanted to hear what's going on in his life, his goals. That way, by the time at the end when we were making the creed, it felt kind of like a more collaborative group practice instead of like Dr. Wang bossing him around. So my creed is basically three things. I want every single appointment to be faster than what the patient expected. I want it to be more pain-free than what the patient expected. And I want it to be more fun than what the patient expected. Realistically, it's not always going to be all those three, right? But I want it to be some permutation of two of those three. And like that way he knows my goals. Because otherwise I think like, I don't blame assistants for like not understanding, like flying in blind, not understanding like what our goals are. Because if you're not on the same page about what your goals are, like how do you expect them to like perform the way that you want or to perform the way that they want too? Because keep in mind, that creed I came up with Alex too. Like I wanted his input.
Yeah. Gosh, Dr. Connie, you are wise beyond your years.
Oh my gosh, you're so sweet.
Your group is very lucky to have you.
Thank you. And well, I don't know. You should interview my boss, really. Then you'll get the real tea.
But you have a self-awareness and emotional maturity that not everyone has. I mean, even some of the most seasoned docs, and even just this a mind that really tries to maximize and, you know, do the best you can with the situation that you're in. And you're bringing in all different types of, you know, modalities, from just having emotional intelligence, neuroscience, how you show up, just that the empathy. I mean, there's so many different variables that you're bringing in that all make a difference and they all add up. So it's really, really cool what you are creating for yourself, and then also the impact that you're having with others. And I know you share a lot about this on your social media, which is really awesome. And you're always giving suggestions on how people can improve their communication and things like that. So I love everything you said. And even just connecting with the team, you know, in the lunch area is super powerful, and building those relationships and that camaraderie is so important. And also it's important because when you're off, the team knows and they can rally behind you and help you out and see what's up and get you back on track on some of those days where you're not operating at prime level. So it's good. Let people know you, you know, let people in and be a little more vulnerable, which I think is really powerful too. So thank you for all of that. And thank you for all those tips and suggestions. And I guess I just have one more question before we go, because I know this is something I've actually seen reels about this too, but I've heard it firsthand from associates that I work with, is kind of that feeling like right before you have before going into a room, right? Like maybe you got an email you didn't like, or a team member is being difficult, or I don't know, just something that kind of sets you into a place where you're not feeling really powerful, or maybe you're just feeling insecure, right? It's just one of those days where you're like, man, I've had 3 patients in a row challenge me on my skills or if my credentials, like they just didn't think I could do it. And that happens so much to young associates, especially women too, especially small women, right? I've known some female docs that are just petite in size, and they're also battling against that stereotype, right?
Isn't that so funny? You're like, you're judging me on so many things. I can't control how tall I got from my mom. Like, that's like, of course you're going to nitpick me for that too.
I know an associate who was asked, are you strong enough to do this?
Yeah, like an extraction or something. Yeah.
Horrible. Yeah. So do you do any kind of like priming, like outside the room or just even walking into the office that you could share that, you know, other folks can maybe borrow?
100%. You know what's interesting? Okay. So I know that not every dentist is going to do this, which I totally respect, but something I did before I started, like the time frame after I graduated, before I started work, I did nervous system coaching, meaning like I had a nervous system coach. It sounds woo-woo, I know, but like I went through it with her. And like everyone has a nervous system that like basically, let's be honest, if you work in the dental field, it's like very overactive, right? So we all have different things that will bring us back to this place of like happiness, acceptance, love. Like, we have different phases. Most of us, if you're like anxious and in imposter syndrome, you're operating from a system of like lack, feeling inadequate. And when we are like that, we're just not our best selves. So how do you get to your best self? Everyone has different like glimmers or different, like they call them glimmers, different things that bring you to your best place. For me, it's like laughing with my people. So like before I go into a room that's hard, like before and after, I try to just prime myself by like, I'll like hang out and like, I just like shoot the shit at the front desk. I'm like eating their snacks. I'm like asking them about their nails. Like, honestly, I always joke that I'm like a personality hire. For any patients listening, don't worry. I'm also good. But I always joke that I'm a personality hire, right? So for me, I get joy from just like being around the people and like not being productive. I really also hope Steve is not listening to this. Yeah, I know. But honestly, that wouldn't be a surprise. He knows me. You have to figure out before you take that expensive CE, before you invest all this yada yada and all the other stuff, the most important thing you can learn about is yourself. So you need to learn about like what brings you back to your best self. That's not everyone. Let's be honest. Some people need to like sit in their car or sit in the bathroom, splash some water on their face, do some deep breathing. I don't know what it is, but that's your job, is to figure out what it is for you. Because if you can't do that and know that about yourself, you're always going to be at the mercy of the next grumpy patient, the next grumpy team member, whatever. You don't want to be at the mercy of whatever's coming to you. So that's the best way to take control and to like recenter yourself before you go into that tough room.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. I would say for me, it's cats, probably cat pictures, cat videos, and comedy.
Yeah. Wait, do you have cats?
I have one, and she's a diva, and anyone that knows me knows about her, Kelly, Kelly the queen. And it's good that she's a queen and that we spoil her so much, because if she wasn't such a diva, I'd probably have like 8 cats.
You keep her picture like on the desk, or like how do you bring Kelly into like your life?
Yeah, there's photos of her in front of me at the moment. Yeah, but she's taught me a lot about boundaries. I talk about her a lot in this way. She is so in love with us. We're so in love with her, but it's always on her terms, and she's not a cuddly cat. So she's not a lap cat. She doesn't jump in the bed. She always wants to be near, but not like too much. She lets us pet and stuff like that. Like, she's a very loving cat. She's not aggressive or anything. I mean, she's such a pacifist. I mean, there's not like a violent bone in her body. It's, we joke she'd never survive a day in the wild. She's just so tender and loving, and from over here. So that's afar. Just from like a foot away. But yeah, she's just like cats. I just see any kind of, it's like, well, animals in general. I love all animals, and any kind of, if I see animals or I'm around animals or I see something online, it just bursts my heart right open. And so, yeah, for me, that's something that just like, puts me at ease. And I love comedy. I'm a huge comedy nut. So if it's not,
oh, animals, that's great. Like, watch a clip or something. That's like such a good example. Like, just scroll and like save yourself like a little bank of like funny social media clips or funny whatever. That's a good one.
That's great. Well, Dr. Kadi, like I said, you are a breath of fresh air. You are so wise and so brilliant and so talented. And I'm so grateful that we had this time together. And I'd probably love to have you on again to just keep you fresh in everyone's minds, because I think everything you talk about is so important, and you bring just such a beautiful, fun, lighthearted, but also wildly intelligent and astute perspective to everything that we talk about. So thank you again for being on, and I just really appreciate your time today.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much for having me. Before we started recording, we were talking about how like I was listening to the podcast, and like, first of all, I think what you're doing for the community is amazing, but I also, classic like what we talked about today, I had such imposter syndrome. I was like, oh my god, why did she want me? Like, are we sure she went me? Or maybe it was some other doctor that she was thinking of. So I just want to say, like, and being a podcast host myself, like, you're such a good host. You make us all feel so comfortable. So thank you for providing a space where all of your guests feel so comfortable to share their journey.
You are welcome. Thank you.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.